the Houston Astros have the entire Major League Baseball at their necks. Not only the entire Major League Baseball, but they also have star players speaking out about it. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
And please pardon my French as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, February 24th, 2020, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And listeners, you can also follow me and Mad Mike on social media. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. LLOYD. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, when we have time, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com. You can send them directly to the website, or you can send them to either one of our social media outlets. We keep tabs on that as well, listeners. We was off last week because of President's Day, but we're back at it. Me and Mad Mike are here, ready to roll up our sleeves. We have another exciting show for you today, listeners. As always, we're going to talk some more Houston Astros, as now star players are coming out and speaking out about the cheating scandal. We're going to talk some New York Knicks basketball as the coach is up to some antics that doesn't have Mad Mike happy at all. And Steve Stout, the New York Knicks, what is it, public relations person, was on First Take, and he said some things. We're going to dissect that as well. And Kyrie Irving is finished for the rest of this NBA basketball season, and he's undergoing season-ending shoulder surgery. We're going to touch up on some other things as well. So as always, listeners, just buckle up, sit back in my lap, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time to talk sports with Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm just getting back to New York. I was in Florida for the weekend, opening up spring training, getting a buzz around the New York Yankees and baseball in general.
Listen, Mad Mike, being that we're talking about baseball, I know we've touched up on this topic quite a bit, but now there's more of even a bigger stir being done right now, as you have some of the best players in the game, okay? Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, Mike Trout, speaking out about the Houston Astros and this whole cheating scandal that's going on. Now, before we get into our comments, Mad Mike, I just want to play a voice recording of those three particular players when they were being asked about how they felt about the cheating scandal. So we're going to start off with Cody Bellinger first. And here's Cody Bellinger's take, listeners, on how he feels about the Houston Astros cheating scandal.
I don't know. I know personally I lost respect for those guys. I think I would say everyone in the show in the big league lost respect for those guys. But then again, there's also a time where people do make mistakes. And, you know, you feel success, you get success, you're getting money, you're getting MVPs. You know, it's hard to turn that down. So you do make mistakes. I think that there is a way to get over it. because everyone does make mistakes. But you know, they just gotta go out, be themselves, and they're a damn good team without the trash cans. You know, they would have had all stars without the trash cans. Those guys are great players. I think everyone respected what they did, but now, man, it's like, you know, what's real, what's not. So it's a tough situation to be in for them. I don't know. I don't know many people that respect them right now.
They've been cheating for 3 years. So do you think they cheated in 18 and 19?
I mean, 100%. I don't know why they would stop.
That's the rationale that they would.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I mean, they've been cheating for, we do whatever, but like, man, they got something going on in Houston. Like, these guys are a different team at home. And it came out that they're doing this, so it's obvious.
Stop there. You know, they can open the playoffs. They were cheating 17.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know what the interrogation room said. I don't know. Those guys haven't came out personally in public about what they did and didn't do, so it's hard to say. See Altuve grabbing his jersey after the game winner off Chapman saying, don't rip my shirt off. I don't know what human hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman to send your team to the World Series. And one has the thought to say, don't rip my jersey off. But two, go in the tunnel, change your shirt, and then come out and do your interview. Like that makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. Because I know me. Gary Sanchez said yesterday, you can rip my shirt off, my pants off. I sent my team the World Series off for Aroldis Chapman and the ninth inning at home. You can do, you know, I'm going crazy.
There you have it, listeners. That was Cody Bellinger from the L.A. Dodgers, Rookie of the Year Award winner. And that was his thoughts on the whole Houston Astros thing. Now, before we move on to Mike Trout, Matt Mike, I just want to get your thoughts on what Cody Bellinger said. Because, look, we've been saying this from the jump. Okay, the whole thing with Altuve running around the bases and him grabbing his shirt and him going in the, you know, him running to the dugout and then coming back out and doing an interview and his response, you know, when asked why did he do that, about him being embarrassed or his wife didn't want him to be shirtless on TV. A bunch of hot nonsense, Matt Mike. Commissioner, in my opinion, the commissioner has dropped the ball on this. And he's throwing himself under the bus as well. We'll touch up on that, but I just want to get your thoughts or reaction to what Cody Bellinger had to say on this, Matt Mike.
I don't know. How can you can't be upset with him. There's no criticism. There's no criticism of any player you're going to get from me that talks about the Houston Astros. You're just not, especially when it's a Dodger, especially when, and if you think about it, the Yankees and Dodgers, who's been screwed over by this more? Remember something. The Dodgers didn't just lose a World Series to the Houston Astros. They then lost a World Series to the Boston Red Sox the following year, who, by the way, was managed by Alex Cora, who, by the way, are being investigated for the same exact nonsense. So when they talk, I give them all the respect in the world. I'm going to let them talk. You know what I mean? When Carlos Correa says, well, you go out there and win it. You know, that was just 1 year. What about 2018? 2017, we cheated. Yeah, we got that. 2018, we ain't cheat, and they still didn't win. Yeah, because they were playing against the Houston Astros 2.0 and the Boston Red Sox, who, by the way, no one talks about. Their offense was a mess the year before, and then Alex Cora gets there, and their offense is a machine. And then this year, you know what I mean? I just feel like for the Dodgers especially, to make the World Series 2 years in a row and to find out the two teams that beat you were both cheating, I'd say that his comments were reserved. For me, what I know I would have said compared to what he said, I'm not criticizing him. I think he has all the leverage in the world.
And here's the crazy part, Matt, Mike, and listeners. Carlos Correa, shortstop from the Houston Astros, then sent kind of a message that if you say something like this to me, when I see you, it's on. We duking it out. He told Cody Bellinger to shut the F up. Basically.
Yeah, but that's what doesn't make sense to me, man. That part doesn't make sense. What are you doing? Like, on that Thursday, when Jim Crane spoke, and Altuve and Bregman came and gave these insulting 30-second, we're just going to move on interviews, literally, didn't even take questions, Carlos Correa was the only player in that locker room that was contrite about what happened. And then that was on Thursday. And then 2 days later, on Saturday, he's going, shut the F up. If you don't have the facts, well, we do have the facts. The commissioner's report came out. He said you cheated in 18. He said you cheated in 17. And the only thing that they exonerated you and didn't even exonerate you, they just said that they couldn't find any facts to support that you were wearing a device. Here's what I'm going to tell you about that. Lloyd, the cover-up is always worse than a crime. We know that this commissioner found something, and we know he's covering up for him. We know this. That's why the players are going crazy. And this commissioner is going to cost himself his job doing this.
But here's the thing, man. I was listening to Michael K. show, and Michael K. seems to think that the commissioner won't lose his job. And the reason why he won't lose his job is because he's employed by the owners of Major League Baseball. And one thing that he has done in his tenure as commissioner of baseball is make those guys money.
Yeah, but you know what? Let me tell you something. What commissioner denigrates the trophy, the World Series champion, or whatever you want to call it, the championship trophy of their respective sport and gets away with it? He called their trophy a piece of metal in defense of the Houston Astros. Think about this for a second. In defending the Houston Astros, who we know are guilty of sin, he denigrated the World Series trophy. He basically said, this piece of metal, what's it worth? It makes no sense to take it away. It's not worth anything. It's just a piece of metal.
And being aware, while we're on him, because I have brought him up in the intro, man, Mike, this guy continues to shoot himself in the foot. Not only by saying that, then he turns around and says, well, I would have punished him. You know, he's kind of retracting because he's catching heat for not punishing him. Then he turns around and says that he would have punished him.
Yeah, but this is that's another one where he dug his own grave, and it's another one where I don't know that he can survive it, because he blamed the players' union. What he tried to do in his comments was turn the players' union, the players, against each other, not realizing that the players already turned against each other. The players want to see players on the Houston Astros suspended. So what he said was the players' union would not make these guys available to be interviewed unless I granted them immunity. So what that is take into account the Houston Astros are only 3% of all of baseball. So Tony Clark, basically, according to the commissioner, said the 3% of the Houston Astros is more important than the other 97% of the players in baseball I represent. That's what the commissioner said, Tony Clark said. Tony Clark had to come out and vehemently deny all of those allegations set forth by the commissioner. He said he never asked for immunity. Not one time during any conversation in setting up these interviews did he demand immunity from the commissioner. So who's lying? The players' union? President of the players' union? Or the commissioner of baseball?
Yeah, and now we're going to move on to, in my opinion, the best player in baseball right now. And that's center fielder Mike Trout from the Los Angeles, from the Anaheim Angels. I'm sorry. Did they switch the name back to Los Angeles, or are they Anaheim still?
I think they're the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Anaheim. Okay, so now we're going to hear comments from, in my opinion, the best player in baseball about what he thinks about this whole Houston Astros cheating scandal. Here's Mike Trout, center fielder from the Los Angeles Angels.
It's sad for baseball. You know, it's tough. You know, they cheated. And, you know, just I don't agree with the punishment. You know, the player's not, you know, getting anything. You know, it was a player-driven, you know, thing. You know, it sucks, too, because, you know, like you said, a guy's career has been affected. A lot of people, you know, lost jobs. It was tough. You know, it would be me going up to the plate knowing what's coming would be pretty fun up there. So, yeah, it's just, like I said, a lot of guys lost respect for some of the guys. And, you know, it seems like every day something new comes out. So
themselves.
Just trying to explain what happened. You know, you read a lot of stuff in the paper, and you know, once you read something, a lot of people jump to that conclusion. But sometimes it's right, sometimes it's false. It's like I said, it was a tough off season to see that as a baseball player, and you know, you just hope Major League Baseball cleans it up and we play good baseball from here on out. If you know what's coming, it's gonna definitely help you. I think that's, you know, it's tough. You're taking the trophy away, taking the rings away. I think they should definitely do something. I don't know what, but to cheat like that and not get anything, it's sad to see. Sure, I didn't notice the bang. I noticed the banging off the bat in center field. It just seemed like they weren't missing pitches, and it was just it's frustrating because you got guys in here battling, coming to the ballpark every day, working on stuff, and they make a nasty pitch down and away. I mean, I can't tell you when this happened, but I'm sure it did. I can't imagine what the pitchers feel like, you know, knowing going in there and, you know, you never know what it, you know, it's a mental game. You go on a stretch where you're doing good, and you go, if you went into Houston and got banged up, it could mentally drain it, you know.
All right, so that's Mike Trout, listeners, okay? And, man, Mike, before I get your comments on, you know, how you feel about, you know, what Mike Trout's saying, I just want to kind of give my thoughts on this. You know, he brought up the fact that this is professional, you know, these are other players' livelihood. Now, there's a pitcher from the Toronto Blue Jays that pitched in Houston last season, and Houston touched him up. They roughed him up. And after he was removed from that game, listeners, he got sent down to the minors. Okay? And I believe he was eventually cut. Is that correct, man, Mike? Did he get cut? Or was it that he just got sent down to the minors?
Well,
because sent down to the minors is like getting cut almost, depending.
So the pitcher was Dylan G, and what happened was the starter for that day ended up getting smoked, and Dylan G came in mop-up duty. He was basically, you know, he came in as a long man to mop up, and he knew they needed pitching, so he basically, you know, after the game, packed his bags, called his wife, and basically told her, hey, I think, you know, he knew he was getting let go. But at that point, he was like, I don't think I'm going to get picked up by anybody else. So he looked at it as, you know what, it might be time to retire. I think after he was released because of a numbers crunch, they needed to call up pitchers for the next day. I think he got picked up by Minnesota later that year. But this is exactly what Mike Trout is referring to. You don't know how you've impacted people's lives. Like, yeah, he got picked up by Minnesota, but he came in that day. He pitched, to my understanding, if I recall my numbers correctly, he pitched 3 1/3 innings of one run ball, in mop up duty for a starter who only went like 2 innings and gave up like 8 or 9 runs. And, that could have been the last day he ever pitched in the major leagues because they were cheating. And not because he was a bum. It was just, he just came to that point in his career where, you know, they needed more arms, and we were talking about a veteran, a journeyman veteran at that point in his career. And that's just the impact it has, man. It's sad, but it's Mike Trout's not wrong. Like that's why I think the players are so incensed by it, because of how cavalier these guys have been. Like, have you heard one player on Houston from the owner down come out and say, I'm sorry, we cheated?
Well, I mean, they did, but it was some of the most unsincere apologies I've ever heard from anybody before.
The only people, no, Lord, the only people that have said, I'm sorry, this is why I phrase it that way, on the Houston Astros, like on the Astros team right now, not one player has come out and said, I'm sorry, that played for the Astros right now, this second. Anybody that has apologized has moved on to another organization already.
Well,
because they have to.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I said it's not sincere. I mean, obviously, at the beginning of the spring training, remember Altuve and Bregman and those guys came up, and, you know, we want to, you know, we're sincerely sorry, you know, sorry for what happened. But it, like I said, you know, players are like, that's a bunch of hot caca, man. Nobody believes that with that any type of sincerity. Nobody believes that with any type of sincerity at all.
Not one of them
None.
Took the question.
None.
It's you know, and like I said, if your owner, and this is what Manfred said last Sunday in his interview, one, because he was so clunky in his interview, something that people overlooked, was the fact that he said he wouldn't call it a success. He'd actually call it a failure, their handling of it on Thursday. And he said that that starts with the owner. Everyone has to be sorry from the top down. And no one's talking about that because, you know, like we touched on his other comments about taking away the trophy and everything else. Otherwise, yeah, all the pressure would be on Jim Crane right now to issue a real apology, to come out and admit everything they did. But here's what I'll tell you, and it's the one thing that Mike Trout also said to close up his loop. He said that this was a player-driven scandal, whatever you want to call it, cheating system. But they suspended and fired the GM and coach. You know what I mean? Like, so when we sit here and we talk about it, it's a player-driven cheating system, and not one player got in trouble for it. Not to mention the only player that was even named was Carlos Beltran, because they were comfortable with the fact that he was already retired. If you weren't going to name any players, I mentioned this on another show, but if you weren't going to name any players, then don't name any players. If you were going to leave it at Alex Cora because he was a coach, then you leave it at Alex Cora. That simple. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, if those guys have to lose their livelihood, everybody else should too.
And the sad part about it, Mad Mike, and this is very unfortunate, now Mike Fryers was called by snitch by David Ortiz. You know, David Ortiz called him a snitch. And he was like, well, why didn't you say anything when you was there? You know, and I get that point of it as well. You know, I get that aspect of it, but call him a snitch, you know, because, you know,
I understand it, Lloyd. I understand it. You got to think about something. And I heard Cameron Maven say this. Cameron Maven said, I'm loyal to the laundry. I'm loyal to the uniform I'm wearing, right? So, yeah, and he admitted he told the Yankees, okay, which I thought was kind of dope. Cameron Maven said, I'm not going to tell you what I told them. But basically, he did tell them how they cheated, he told them the whole system. And when it comes to Mike Fryers, the issue I have is, think about how you resurrected your own career. Think about the success you had in Houston. Were you sorry for it? No, you weren't. And as a matter of fact, like I told you, I know for a fact that their pitchers are cheating too. I know for a fact that their pitchers are doctoring balls with pine tar. That's how their spin rates are astronomically higher than everybody else in baseball.
Now, I know that. Now, let me stop you right there, man, Mike, and I want to get your thoughts on this. That's unfortunate because, you know, Mike Fryers is receiving death threats from fans because of that. But you talk about, you know, the Houston Astros pitchers cheating, right? We currently have one on our staff, okay, in Garrett Cole.
And we're going to see, right?
Right. And here's the thing. You know, Garrett Cole, obviously, he can't come out and be like, yeah, they did it. You know what I'm saying? When they asked him about it, he said, oh, I believe my ex-teammates. Now, that was the politically correct thing to say. Did I believe it? Hell no.
Well, Lloyd, is he not one of the guys I'm talking about? Garrett Cole didn't lose a game after me. Garrett Cole went undefeated after mid-May for the entire season until the playoffs. Think about that. And not just the playoffs. I'm talking about until the World Series. This man went from May through October without losing a game.
Now,
he's
here's
exactly
the thing,
what I'm talking about.
Man, Mike, just think if he has a rough season with the Yankees. Just think if the Houston Astros don't make the playoffs. Just think about that. Now, granted, the Houston Astros are playing in the AL West. Okay, not that strong of a division. I mean, you got Oakland out there, right? Oakland usually plays solid baseball, you know. But outside of Oakland, man, Mike, who else is there? You know,
Texas
I would expect Texas and the Angels to be better. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, let's face it, maybe, you know, you can question that the AL Central is weaker than the West. But boy, am I pulling for this team not to make the playoffs, man. Boy, am I.
Yeah, I'm
pulling. Now, real quick, Mad Mike, you know, we got to get Aaron Judge's take on it. And, you know, just give our final thoughts before we close out, you know, the first half of the show on this cheating thing. And, you know, before we close out, you know, I want to give your opinion on if you was a player, how would you handle the Houston Astros when you went up against them? And I'll give my take on it. If I was a player or on a team, what I would tell my teammates on how we should handle it. But just listen to Aaron Judge's comment about his thoughts on a Houston Astros cheating scandal. Aaron Judge, right fielder from the New York Yankees.
The Astros thing is tough, you know, especially in the offseason. For me, in the offseason, especially, you know, guys are, you know, free agents and signing, those types of stuff I want to hear about. I want to hear about some of my buddies and peers and, you know, teammates, and I signed a big deal and set their families up for life, you know, and all I ever heard or saw on TV when I heard about the network or ESPN, baseball, you know, like baseball signs, you know, like cheating, 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 and that, you know, and first and foremost, the thing, you know, I grew up a fan of baseball, and I don't want to do that. You know, I'm not a little kid, I don't know little kids who, you know, look up to us, you know, I'm treated like a superhero, so, you know, seeing, you know, that is, you know, why is someone so cheating, what's the best, what's that, you know, that was a tough thing for me, seeing, just all the talk about cheating. Destroy the reputation of the game that came to me so many great things, and so many, you know, players around the league, you know, so many great things. It was tough to watch, you know, and, you know, through the whole thing, and once it came out, you know, I was pretty upset, you know, to know that we were probably, you know, cheated out of the possibility of, you know, making it to the World Series. And as a kid, that, you know, forget us as individual awards, forget how many games, how many homers you can hit the ball, you know, winning a World Series, you know, winning a World Series with your team, fighting for the very end, you know, one question series you put in the game, you know, to be that last team advantage, you know, and to hear that you got cheated out of that opportunity, that's tough to kind of, you know, let go, you know, but that's one, so I can talk about this now, and let it go on the 2020, because you got a pretty good team, a lot of important things you want to do, but,
so that was Aaron Judge, listeners, giving his thoughts on the Astros cheating scandal. And not for nothing, in 2017, listeners, when Houston won that, remember, that's when Jose Altuve beat out Aaron Judge and won the MVP award. An award that myself and Mad Mike felt it should have went to Aaron Judge, hands down. Hands down should have went to Aaron Judge. So imagine what Aaron Judge is thinking. Imagine what the New York Yankees are thinking. Imagine what the L.A. Dodgers are thinking. Imagine what every team in baseball is thinking right now. And I was watching, I forgot the name of the show with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp, Mad Mike. But I was watching that show, and Skip Bayless was on there talking about stealing signs has been a part of baseball for over 100 years. Okay? He couldn't be any more incorrect about that statement. And here's why he's incorrect, listeners. The way the Houston Astros stole signs, that's not the way it's done. It's not the way it's completely different. If you're on second base and you can steal the signs of a catcher and let your hitter know what's coming, that's okay. That's okay. Because the catcher then needs to do a better job of kind of throwing you a curveball on what's coming. So you can steal a sign. To me, that's within the art of war of baseball. But then when you start using technology and using trash cans and using buzzers and all that stuff, how the hell could you think that it's the same thing? It's not the same thing. It's not. These dudes took it to the next level. They took it to the next level. And I said it once, and I said it before. Like, I'll say it again. That World Series trophy needs to be taken away from them. I'm not saying give it to the L.A. Dodgers, and I'm not saying, you know, whatever the case, but it needs to be an asterisk next to that and just vacant. Who won the World Series in 2017? Nobody. The players that are involved in this cheating scandal need to be punished. They need to be punished. The organization that's responsible for allowing this to happen needs to be punished. And I'm not talking about $5 million and two draft picks taken away. They need to be punished. No playoffs. Need to be punished. And if I'm a player, Mad Mike, and if I'm on a team in Major League Baseball right now, and I step onto that field with the Houston Astros, I turn my back to them. I don't stick to them. I ain't got nothing to say to you, man. Don't come up to me before in pregame warm-ups and want to shake my hand and have a conversation with me. I don't want to have nothing to do with you right now. And that's, in my opinion, that's how the players and on teams need to deal with the Houston Astros this year. And I'm sure at some point we're going to talk about this again, but right now that's my final take and those are my final thoughts on the Houston Astros and this whole thing, man. Mike, I'll let you throw in your final thoughts before we go to a break.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, for my offensive players, I'm not having any conversations or laughs. There's no jokes when I'm on base. I'd love to see what happens when Aaron Judge is on second base and Altuve is over at the base trying to have a conversation with him. No smiles, all business. You know, make them feel like the pariahs they are. Make them feel like the outsiders. As far as my pitchers go, I don't want any of my relievers throwing at them simply because I do think Manfred's in a real tight squeeze here because he's already said he wasn't gonna condone intentional beaming with the baseball. So now he's put himself in a position where he's got to issue suspensions. My starters, yeah, I love for my starter to go 100 pitches and then hit one of them, let one get away. You know, if he takes the 5-game suspension, so what? You know, you'll go with an opener on that fifth day, and he'll pitch on the sixth day, and you reset everything. It's not a big deal. That's my take on that. And, you know, they just – you got to make them feel uncomfortable. Those players got to feel like they did something wrong, and it's got to come from their peers. And that's what their peers are doing by speaking out. They're not going to let the fans forget about it. They're not going to let anybody forget about it. They want the heat turned up on the Houston Astros players and organization. And I'm happy the players are doing it because they don't have to be quiet. You know, I know that memo had leaked out, that Manfred sent out the memo and said he didn't want anybody talking about the suspension. That's why you have a union. You know, the commissioner can't overstep his bounds. He can't touch them. They can speak up on issues, and that's what they're doing. And they put the pressure on Manfred. They put the pressure on the Astros, and I love it. And not to mention, here's something else about their cheating scandal that somebody else – you know, that a lot of people haven't come really highlighted either. It wasn't on field, but a part of their cheating scandal was they weren't calibrating. So baseball has a tool, it's called TrackMan, where you're able to track. That's what tracks the spin rates and everything. That helps you value like the pitchers, like minor league pitchers in trades. So during the scandal, it also came out that they weren't calibrating their TrackMan, and they were overstating and understating spin rates and values to change the values of players in trades. And apparently, organizations complained to Major League Baseball about this too, and baseball did nothing. And they have egg on their face for that as well, because now during this investigation, they were complained about as recently as 2018. And during this investigation, that also showed up. So now you got to think about everyone's always like, oh, how did they pull this trade off and how did they pull that trade off? Well, think about it. If you're devaluing players in trades, you know that you're getting an A prospect, but you're fighting and convincing everybody that he's a B or C level prospect because of his spin rates and all these other tools that you're lying about. You're getting better players back. You're negotiating deals for better players than what you're leading on. It's real messed up stuff, man. Like when you think about it, and I hate to say it, but there's no way all these things are taking place and the owner had no knowledge. And I think back to when baseball suspended George Steinbrenner. Don't tell me an owner can't be suspended. George Steinbrenner was suspended for multiple years. Jim Crane should have not walked away from this unscathed. It's inexcusable.
Agreed. Boy, do I agree with that. At some point, hopefully, you know, maybe we can get our good friend Joe Rivera, you know, columnist from the Sporting News, to see his thoughts on this as well and see how he feels about it. Because, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and initially he was kind of saying, like, you know, it's not, you know, I kind of got the thought that he was saying it wasn't that big of a deal when it initially came out. I'm curious to see how he feels now. I don't know if you spoke to him about it, man, Mike, but real quick, if you have, what is his thoughts, or how does he feel about it now, being that more stuff has come out with this, you know, with the scandal? Has he said anything to you about it or his thoughts on it?
I mean, initially he thought that the commissioner did as well as he could. But, you know, the more you think about it and the more stuff comes out, the less he thinks the commissioner, you know, the more he thinks that the Astros didn't get what they deserved. But he'll tell you the same thing. Here's the problem. We don't know how why. We know that what Houston was doing. One of the reasons Houston is not sorry is because Houston swears everybody else was doing this. So that's his concern. His concern is that this is going to end up killing baseball. You know what I mean? That we're just going to start having a whole bunch of name drops. You know, Alex Cora kind of, he alluded to what Alex Cora did last year when he insinuated Carlos Beltran was making all the difference in the world for the New York Yankees. You're going to start having things like that. And, you know, he's just like, it's going to end up killing the sport. It's you know, Manfred has done such a bad job of it. He's made it worse. And that's where he's at right now.
All right. So, listen, if there you have it. That's our take on this whole team scandal. Like I said, at some point, we'll touch up on this again. This isn't going away. It's going to be interesting to see how things are handled during the baseball season, how the players react, how the owners react, you know, and how the commissioner of baseball reacts. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Kyrie Irving. We're going to talk some New York Knicks. We're going to talk possibly Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury as that fight happened over the weekend. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listen, it's the first half of the show. We discussed this Astros cheating scandal as it's just completely been a wildfire, so to speak, you know, as far as, you know, what's going on with them and how more players are speaking out. So, you know, it's turned into a wildfire. We'll see what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see what happens about that. But now let's talk some basketball, Mad Mike, and let's talk about a player that I know you're ready to roll up your sleeves and go in on. And that's Mr. Kyrie Irving. Mr. Kyrie Irving, Brooklyn Nets star, who will miss the remainder of this season as he will undergo surgery to repair his shoulder injury, okay? Now, Nets head coach Kenny Atkinson announced that earlier this week that Irving was going to be out indefinitely after re-aggravating his shoulder. Irving, as we all know, as me and Mad Mike have spoken about this, on the show, listeners, missed 25 straight games from November 16th to January 10th because of an impingement in his right shoulder. He's a six-time All-Star, and he explained last month what he was experiencing while trying to get back on the court. Okay? According to him, it was a very unique injury, all right? And in his nine games after returning, he might have been playing his best basketball of the season. All right. Truth be told, he was averaging 26 points, 5.4 assists. All right. And he was shooting 53% from the field and 49% from 3-point range. And he last played on February 1st against the Washington Wizards. All right. The Nets still have 29 games remaining in this season, and they won 7 of the last 10 games before the All-Star break and currently own the 7th seed in the Eastern Conference, Mad Mike, the 7th seed, and that's without Kyrie Irving missing all those games. So Kyrie Irving throwing all his teammates under the bus and saying that we're one piece or two pieces away or maybe three pieces away. Look at what this team is doing without him. So what does that say about Kyrie Irving? The Nets currently hold the 7th seed in the Eastern Conference without Kyrie Irving. Without him. And they played a game the other night against the 76ers, and that's a game that they should have won. They ended up losing, but they're playing well without him. That goes back to the whole thing about how me and Mad Mike are saying, if it wasn't broke, don't fix it. They didn't need to do all that. They didn't need to get rid of D'Angelo Russell. They didn't need to. But they did. And now they don't have Kyrie Irving, and they don't have Kevin Durant, and look at what this team is doing. Look at what they're doing. Kyrie, and then on top of that, man, Mike, before I let you give your piece, he was voted as being the vice president of the Players Union. You want somebody to be a leader that's not a leader? He wasn't a leader in Cleveland. He wasn't a leader in Boston. And he's not a leader in Brooklyn. And you want what a leader would do is a leader would play through pain. Play through pain, okay, and do what he has to do to get his team in the playoffs. But what he's doing, he's washing his hands with this whole season and be like, well, you know, I'll come back when Kevin Durant comes back. I so hope the Nets make the playoffs, listeners. I so hope they do. Because if they do, it's a slap in the face to Kyrie Irving. I'm done, man. Mike, you give your you can give your piece on or your thoughts on this.
I told you so. That's really my thoughts. I told you so. Kyrie Irving, he's probably, I don't know, what is he, 28, 29 years old, probably has the body of a 40-year-old with all these injuries. He's never been the most reliant, you know, player as far as durability goes. And when he is healthy and he's playing, he normally does things like make waves with the things he says. He just comes across as an unstable individual, which is why you get those comments about the pieces, them needing more pieces. I mean, get on the court, develop some chemistry, play ball a little bit with your teammates before you get on and say what it is you need. At the end of the day, we've said this before, they don't know what they need. They have no clue what they need. Why? Because they have no Kevin Durant this year because Kyrie Irving has missed so many games. DeAndre Jordan has missed so many games. They don't know what they have there. They have no idea. You know what I mean? There's no chemistry. You don't know if you're one piece away. They might have a championship relevant team, you know, as soon as next year. But, you know, I don't know, man. I hear all of it. I hear Spencer Dinwiddie taking more shots at the New York Knicks. And in my head, I'm like, yo, dude, you're 4 games under .500. You're banking on Kevin Durant.
4 games under .500, and they holding a 7th seed in the Eastern Conference.
Well, that's my point. You know, like, you can say whatever you want. In the end of the day, if you're playing in the West, well, are we having the same conversation? No, we're not. You're garbage. You know, in the end of the day, as bad as the East Coast is, and this is what I said. I come on, man. I don't understand it, but I don't want to go.
You know, they say,
man,
everything
just
happens for a reason sometimes, Mad Mike. And I was put, you know, I wanted Kyrie Irving to be a Knick. But I knew the whole purpose of getting Kyrie Irving to be a Knick was that it would bring Kevin Durant. Okay,
yeah,
so for that sake, I was like, okay, bring him on. But boy, am I glad he's not wearing a Knicks uniform. Imagine if he was pulling this while wearing a Knicks uniform. And I mean, say
yeah,
what
you
want,
know,
even
that,
though they,
they've all been
even though they share
though,
the same city. Man, Mike, even though they share the same city, the New York media is 10 times worse when it comes to the Knicks than it is with the Nets.
Yeah,
this dude, he would be, oh boy, would he
but
be getting
know,
jammed
you've
up right now?
You've heard Kevin Durant talk recently. You've heard Kevin Durant talk recently. You've heard Spencer Dinwiddie talk recently. Listen, that's what they want. They know that this is a Knicks town. Look, the New York Knicks were just labeled the number one richest franchise in basketball. So everyone keeps calling them a joke. Let me tell you, everyone hopes that they remain a joke. That's why they're pushing this. The New York Knicks turned this around. They're the place to be. They're the spot. You can say whatever you want. The Garden isn't the Mecca no more. Say whatever you want. In the end of the day, that's exactly what and we're going to talk about it. But that's what Steve Stout's talking about. This place here, just because it's been mismanaged doesn't make it a cancerous place to come. You know what I mean? Things change. Things change quick. And I'm telling you right now, the Nets, Brooklyn Nets, they better hope that this thing doesn't, you know, like Spencer Dinwiddie said, they're going to suck next year too. Well, you better hope so. Because if they don't suck next year, then things are not going to be as good for the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets, that's the thing about this. No one's talking about KD, Kyrie, these guys, they need the Knicks to suck. Because if the Knicks are good, if the Knicks are relevant next year, and when I'm talking good, I'm not talking about, you know, top four seed. I'm talking about 6, 7, 8 seed, like just relevant. It takes away from anything. You know this to be fact. It takes away from anything those Nets are doing. Remember when the Nets were still pretty damn decent and they had Deron Williams and the Knicks had Melo and nobody cared about what the Nets were doing. Nobody gave two craps. And they better hope because you spend that kind of money and you give up on guys that you took time to develop like D'Angelo Russell, you better hope that you're relevant next year in this town.
And speaking of the New York Knicks, man, Mike, the latest move by the Knicks to pull themselves out of the NBA's basement, that involved them hiring an advertising executive named Steve Stout. And Steve Stout was hired to rebrand the Knicks as cool. Not only the eyes of the fans, but for prospective free agents. Okay? Now, this is not coincidentally, this move comes after Kevin Durant labeled the Knicks, you know, New York's biggest hip-hop situation is the Knicks not being cool. And he said that on one of the biggest hip-hop rap stations. What was it, 105 he said it on, right? Was it 97?
Yeah, Hot 97.
Hot 97, okay? And here's my thing, Matt Mike. It's another instance of the Knicks putting a Band-Aid on an axe wound. Everyone outside of Madison Square Garden knows the reason why the Knicks aren't perceived as cool or attractive or a destination that free agents want to come to is because their owner is a moron who hires other morons and continues to run the worst organization in the NBA. Now, there may be a glimmer of hope. Maybe a glimmer of hope. Okay? With them bringing in Leon Rose. And Steve Stout was on First Take with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman, and they asked him, okay? And Steve Stout, you know, he kind of implied during that interview that the Knicks were going to fire intern head coach Mike Miller. Now, do I think he should be fired? Yes, and I'm pretty sure that's going to lead into what you have to say about Mike Miller, Matt Mike. But before I do that, you know, there has to be a change. There has to be a change. And obviously, with that change, it should bring in a new head coach, new coaches that are going to help develop these young players, which I'm sure you're going to touch up on that as well when it comes to Mike Miller, Matt Mike.
But isn't that what Steve Stout said? That's
yeah.
Part of the problem? They need to get a coach with pedigree that can. They need a guy who's proven track record that can develop the talent. Did he not say that? The Knicks do have some players. They do. And so he said that on First Take, and that's part of the issue here. The Knicks continuously get the coaching hire wrong. Whether Dolan – you got to think about it. When D'Antoni got hired over Mark Jackson, we know that Dolan jumped in because everyone said Donnie Walsh had a connection. Donnie Walsh was going to hire Mark Jackson. He was going to bring his guy with him. Everybody knew Dolan jumped in and hired a guy, forced him to hire Mike D'Antoni, a guy whose system just didn't fit what they were trying to do. It forced them to take Danilo Gallinari over the big man and Brook Lopez. Think about how that changed things. So I don't disagree with Steve Stout. It starts with the coaching staff. They have to get a guy in here who has a kind of cachet in New York, who understands New Yorkers, who has a history of developing young talent, and they got to make that move first. We know Leon Rose is the guy.
Now, here's the crazy thing, man, Mike. After Steve Stout went on, and the Knicks, this is why the Knicks are so dysfunctional, man. The Knicks then sent out.
You It's his fault. It's not the Knicks' fault. It's Steve Stout's fault. Unless you're going to fire Mike Miller right now, you can't. He can't say that on TV. And that's what everybody's saying.
No, I agree. I'm not saying that he can't. But then the whole thing is, why did the Knicks even let him go in there and speak and talk to begin with?
Well, that's the thing. Stephen A. Smith spoke about that. Steve Stout is not – this is not his only job. You know what I mean? Like, he does this for a lot of teams. The Knicks cannot control what interviews he does. He is not an employee of the Knicks. See, that's the difference here. They hired his agency to help with their rebranding. They did not hire him and make him an employee of the New York Knicks.
Okay.
So therefore, they cannot control what he does and does not do. What they can do is go on the air and refute saying that, hey, we're going to fire our coach. Because at the end of the day, not that I think he's trying to do it, but you've got to have some he has to have some form of authority in that locker room. Otherwise, things are going to get even worse out of hand the rest of the season.
Okay, yeah, that was my misunderstanding. I didn't know all that.
So yeah,
I'm glad
he's not
going to play. Okay, all right. So you have it. So Matt Mike corrected me on that one, listeners. You know, in that case, then he did do the wrong thing, and the Knicks were right for doing what they did. And poor Mike Miller, you know what I'm saying? If you're the head coach and this guy gets on First Take and says that the Knicks need to, you know, bring in a new – I mean, he's not lying. You know what I'm saying? What he said was the absolute truth. It was absolute truth.
No, the problem is he shouldn't have said it. That's the problem. He shouldn't have made it public.
But, you know, so, listen, the Knicks have, you know, they traded away Marcus Morris Sr. You know, they brought in Mo Harkless, a lot of draft picks. You know, and before we move on, man, Mike, I just want you to give your piece. You know, we always talk before we do the show, and you were talking about Mike Miller and a comment that Mike Miller pertaining to the young players on the Knicks roster. Just fill the listeners up on that before we move on.
Well, somebody had in all of this Steve Stout nonsense, somebody over the break had mentioned to him, you know, are you going to play the young kids? Are you going to give the kids more time on the court to develop and towards next season? And Mike Miller said, once again, he reiterated, just because they seem like they're out of it, he is not going to bench veteran players in favor of young kids. He just doesn't believe that the only way to develop these kids is by them playing in actual games and them getting 30, 35 minutes a game. Now, I don't disagree that they shouldn't just be given 35 minutes a game. That's what the Knicks did last year with Kevin Knox. And look how bad he is this year. They didn't give him meaningful minutes. They just said, hey, here, go do whatever you want to do, which we touched on last year, which made us say, just coming out of last season, hey, maybe David Fizdale is not the guy who can develop kids, because we didn't see any development in Kevin Knox. We did see some development in Mitchell Robinson, but that was only after the team traded for DeAndre Jordan. So, you know, when you think about it, from that standpoint, I don't know what Mike Miller's end game is, but if I have Steve Stout saying the development of the young kids is one of the key pieces in hiring the next coach, then the last thing I want to say to anybody is I don't have to play them to develop them. Because when Kevin Knox comes on the court just two nights ago and he starts the game off with back-to-back turnovers and a foul, on defense, you're saying, of course you got to play the guy. Don't tell me you develop him in practice, because as soon as he gets in the game, he's a bum. You know what I mean? But that's for another day, because we've already said that too. Having the right front office, having the right game plan is also part of it. Knowing that you're going to tank last season, there's no reason to draft Kevin Knox. If you know you're going to tank last season, which we weren't 100% on board with, going in, but they should have drafted Michael Porter Jr., right? And the reason you couldn't draft him is because of the back surgery. We understood that. But if you're going to tank, then you draft him. You sit him for the entire year and you let him heal up fully. Michael Porter Jr. already looks, in his half a season this year, better than Kevin Knox, and Kevin Knox is 1.5 seasons. You know what I mean? So that also starts in the front office. So, yeah, I'm hoping Leon Rose is right. I'm hoping Leon Rose brings in top scouts. And I hope he makes the right coaching hire. But, yeah, Mike Miller, yeah. You got to go.
I'm shaking my head.
You don't think playing guys?
Stop. A point about Porter Jr., man. I just shaking my head, man. Lord,
no, because it's true, Lord. You got to think about something. If we're not privy to their inside information. You know what I mean? So when this team comes in and they say we're drafting Kevin Knox and we plan to tank next year. No, everyone said it. Michael Porter Jr., a healthy Michael Porter Jr., potentially is the number one pick overall in that draft. So if you're going to tank, why the hell don't you take Michael Porter Jr.? See, we didn't know they were tanking. Me and you and everybody else. When we're like, yo, you can't take Michael Porter Jr., even though you're actually one of the guys that wanted Michael Porter Jr. anyway.
Yeah.
So props
yep.
to you. But if so more to me. But you know what I mean? Like, if I knew you were going to tank, then no, hell no. I wouldn't. I would have been like, yo, I want Michael Porter Jr. also. By the way, Miles Bridges, MVP of the Rising Stars game, or the World game, over the All-Star break. Remember that, too. That was the other guy
yeah.
that I was praising for the entire tournament. All of a sudden, looks better than Kevin Knox.
Oh, boy. I'm back to being depressed.
And that's why Scott Perry's got to go. That's why he's got to go. Because Scott Perry looks at Kevin Knox, and he sees Kevin Durant. And remember, he was in Seattle
when they
drafted
him. You have a moron owner that's hiring morons. And
so,
Leon Rose might be the first non-moronic hire that he's had in a while. In a while. That's just facts.
So, just saying.
That's
so,
maybe
you know,
since Donnie Walsh might be the last hire that I actually feel made some, you know, that was non-moronic that he did. And he did the moron syndrome with Donnie Walsh, though. With Donnie Walsh, like, nah, let's not trade all our damn assets away for Carmelo Anthony.
Or, like I said, it starts right from the beginning. The non-moronic part, the moronic part was not letting him hire Mark Jackson, his own coach.
Yeah.
Or we could say Phil Jackson was a moronic hire, but we could also say, hey, the moronic part about hiring Phil Jackson was not letting Phil hire Steve Kerr.
Yeah, oh, boy.
You see what I'm talking about?
A moronic owner and the dysfunctionalism of this organization? Hopefully, Leon Bowles, hopefully he'll come in. Listeners and don't want to listen to what this dude has to say, man. That's the only thing we can hope for.
So
that he doesn't meddle with what Leon Rose is trying to do.
But you also have to, he also has to let Leon Rose drain the swamp, so to speak. And what I mean is, you know, Mike Miller is only on the staff because he has a supporter in Allen Houston. Like, Allen Houston shouldn't have any say and who David Fizdale puts on his coaching staff.
That's
so
bad.
To that extent, I'm siding with David Fizdale. You know what I mean? And you know I'm no Fizdale fan, but why should Mike Miller? And then not only that, but Mike Miller that makes Mike Miller a front office guy, right? I don't want anybody like that on my staff. And then Mike Miller's the first guy, like of all these assistants, Mike Miller's the first guy you go to give the job. Over a guy like Royal Ivy and other guys who have proven it already, and you know what I mean. So that just goes to show you, more or less, why Mike Miller was there.
Facts. That is facts, listeners. Man, Mike is hitting you with the facts. But again, this is something that I'm sure we're going to talk about and bring up at some point. All right, man, Mike. I want to talk a little bit of football. I want to talk about the New York Jets. All right, your New York Jets, all right, they added a former first-round pick to their roster Saturday by signing Josh Doctson, who was drafted 22nd overall by the Washington Redskins in 2016. All right, he spent 3 disappointing seasons with the Redskins before they gave up on him. He finished with 81 catches for 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns. He signed a 1-year deal with the Minnesota Vikings but spent most of the year on the injured reserve list before being released last November. Now, the Jets have big questions at receiver. You know, and they headed to free agency. Robbie Anderson, Demaryius Thomas will be unrestricted free agents. Quincy Enunwa's status is up in the air because of a neck injury that cost him the final 15 games of the 2019 season. And right now, the only proven player is slot receiver Jamison Crowder, another former Redskin who led the Jets with 78 catches. Your thoughts on the Jets signing Dotson? And then also, Matt Mike, I'm hearing reports that Odell Beckham Jr. is saying that he wants to come back to New York, but not to play for the New York Giants, listeners, to play for the New York Jets. And I heard rumblings that there were talks going on between the Jets and Cleveland. Your thoughts, Matt Mike?
First on Josh Dotson, if you want to laugh, I actually have a text message I saved from last year to Joe Rivera saying when Josh Dotson got released by the Redskins, that was somebody that I hope the Jets got serious about and signed. I remember him from TCU. This kid was an absolute star. And I hate to say this. One, I think it's true, a true statement. But two, it shows how tenuous your career, you know, how things can go south in your career quick. Like you said, he's been a disappointment, right? And by all accounts, he has been a disappointment when you take production into account. But if you look at his yards per catch, he's averaging something like 15 yards per catch. Somebody in the NFL that if you just don't have talent, that doesn't happen. You know, like special talents average those kind of yards per catch. Jay Gruden has ruined a lot of careers. And you wonder why, because Jay Gruden was never anything special and he's never a special coach in Washington. They never, outside of the 1 year, they won the division at 8-8, 9-7, whatever it was. That year they didn't beat any team over 500. So I think this is a home run. I think that the best is we've yet to see the best, but I will say this. I really don't know if Adam Gase is the coach to unlock, Dotson's potential either. He doesn't seem like a guy who cares much about things like that. He seems like a guy that, you know, he seems like a Jay Gruden type, do my way or don't do it at all type situation. So obviously they see something. I trust Joe Douglas, but this is a guy that I've liked for a long time that I thought that the Jets should actually try to get on the cheap. First round receivers are first round receivers for a reason. Jets have one of the best wide receiver coaches.
Hell of a college career.
Yeah. You don't just forget how to play football. You know what I mean? Does the system work out for you? It's not like the whole Kirk Cousins drama in Washington all those years did him any favors. I mean, his first 2 years his first 2 years in the league was Washington fighting with Kirk Cousins over contract extensions and playing on a franchise tag. So think about that for a second. Other people always are the victims for that. So we'll see what happens. You know what I mean? Once again, this is a player that I like. This is a player that I thought the Jets should have targeted last year instead of Minnesota. I understood why he went there because he had a relationship already with Kirk Cousins. So if I'm trying to reestablish myself in the league, I want to go where somebody knows me. I get it. It didn't work out, and now hopefully it works in the Jets' favor. As far as Odell Beckham goes, I heard all the news. I heard the chatter. I don't see how they get a deal done, though, because the Jets are not moving draft picks. And really, Cleveland is going to try to recoup all the draft picks.
Do you want him, though? That's the thing. Do you want him? If a deal could get done, do you want Odell Beckham Jr.?
Am I allowed to say I want the talent, not the headache?
Because, I mean, you know, you've been critical of Odell. Not about his talent, but about, like you said, the headache that is Odell Beckham Jr. Do you deal with that headache and take – because of the talent, do you deal with the headache? You want him on the sideline sawing up Sam Darnold after he doesn't throw the ball to him or overthrows him on a pad. Do you want to deal with that?
No, I don't. Obviously, I don't. But the problem is, what are the Jets' options right now? Like, Sam is going into year 3. He's in his third season. and this team hasn't done anything offensively yet. So from that standpoint, me personally, I'd prefer to see this team, and I've said this before, I prefer to see this team try to take Crowder, try to take a guy like Dez Bryant, and then maybe draft a guy like Michael Pittman Jr. in the second round and see
now,
what
sir,
that
where,
looks
where
like.
Where are they picking at in this year's draft, Mike? Because there's going to be two really good receivers on the board.
11, but I think in the first round you have to go offensive line for this team, and I think that's exactly where they'll go. But if those linemen are all four linemen going by 11, I think you'll see either CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy as a Jet, or they'll trade back and try to land Henry Ruggs, you know, somewhere like closer to 20 and accumulate some draft picks. If the linemen are all gone, then the Jets, they're going to be very creative this draft. But we'll save that for another show. When we start getting into this combine draft work, I believe the combine is this weekend coming. So we'll have a lot of time to talk about these prospects. But as of right now, if I'm not drafting, I wouldn't make the trade. I probably, like I said, I'd probably look at a guy like Dez Bryant, who word is he's working out with Pat Mahomes this offseason. I'd probably target a guy like Sammy Watkins, who looks like he's going to end up getting cut in Kansas City. He'd be a perfect replacement for Robbie Anderson.
I was saying, like, the Giants to go after, I would say Dez Bryant and Sammy Watkins. They need help at the receiver core also.
And then, yeah, and that's what I would do. And then a guy like Michael Pittman Jr., who's from USC, who has, you know, some top wideout, he's got top wideout, stuff himself. And, you know, I'll put it to you this way. Sometimes if you can't get that number one guy, sometimes you just got to build as good of a group as you possibly can. And I think that's the route that they have to take this year. Because unless you're going to trade for, like, Odell Beckham Jr., I don't see where else you're going to get a number one guy. Unless Amari Cooper hits the market.
And like Matt Mike said, listeners, the combine is coming up. So, you know, on the next show, we'll be talking about the combine and which college kids impressed and which ones didn't. But before we close the show out, Matt Mike, there was a heavyweight title fight that was fought over the weekend. As Tyson Fury beat Deontay Wilder in his seventh round with a TKO to win a title. Okay, Fury was carried into the ring on a chariot built into a golden throne, and he left the undisputed king in the heavyweight boxing. He dominated Deontay Wilder until the referee stopped the fight. All right, it wasn't really, you know, much of a contest. He controlled the fight from the outset, dropping Wilder in the third and fifth rounds before finishing him off in the seventh round. And Wilder spent the entire night, listeners, on wobbly legs and never had a chance to unleash his powerful right hand. And here's the thing about Deontay Wilder, all right? Deontay Wilder is not a boxer. He's a puncher. He's not a boxer. He's a puncher. And there's a big difference between someone that can box and someone that can just punch. And Fury, he's 30-0-1. Okay, he was brilliant. I thought that he established his jab early. He hurt Wilder when he had the chance and never let him recover. And now let's point out that Fury, he won his first heavyweight title when he defeated Vladimir Klitschko in 2015, but was stripped of the crown for substance abuse. Look good, man. Now, Deontay Wilder, 42-1, 41 KOs, is making his 11th defense of the title that he captured in 2015. Now, who's up next for Fury? Is that Anthony Joshua? You know, because the big fight was Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder.
Well,
and Anthony Joshua got beat up. You know, he got beat up, and then, you know, that kind of changed that whole fight. Now that the king of the hill is Tyson Fury now.
Well, I think the reason everybody calls Tyson Fury the lineal champ is specifically because a lot of people don't remember him. A lot of people don't know, but Tyson Fury was the kingpin. Like you said, he beat Vladimir Klitschko when Klitschko was a unified champion. The problem is, right after that, his life spiraled out of control. You know, he suffered from substance abuse. He suffered from depression. He got all the way up to over 400 pounds. He had his license revoked. A lot of things went sideways after that win. And we never saw Tyson Fury in the ring after, which is what allowed guys like Deontay Wilder, which allowed guys like Anthony Joshua to step into the spotlight and for us to say that they were the best. I mean, I'll be very honest with you. I remember that first fight. And I remember saying the only reason Deontay Wilder, for example, yesterday was the Saturday night was the only time in Deontay Wilder's career he's fought a guy ranked above number three in the heavyweight division.
That's great.
So you've defended your title 12 times. You've been champion for 5 years straight, undefeated. You've never fought anybody above the number three ranked heavyweight in the world for your entire career prior to Saturday night. And I said when he fought Fury the first time, he fought Fury the first time in 18, and that was after Fury was out, like I just said, Fury was out of the ring from 2015 to 2018. When I heard Fury say, this is my sixth straight training camp, I'm going to destroy him, this is going to be an easy fight, I believed him. Because if he could go 12 rounds and beat Deontay Wilder the first time, even though it was called a draw, everybody watching that, even Floyd Mayweather said, Tyson Fury won that fight even with the knockdowns. That's how dominant a boxing performance he put on. I knew that Deontay Wilder was in for a long road. And here's the other reason why. Tyson Fury came in the second heaviest he's ever been. Anybody that was paying attention to this fight knew. He fired Ben Davison, his trainer, and he went with Kronk Sugar Hill from Kronk Gym. Anybody who knows boxing knows Emmanuel Stewart, Kronk Gym. They believe those big fighters like Lennox Lewis, they're gonna and Vlad Klitschko actually, they're gonna put that jab in your face and it's gonna come right behind that jab, bang with the straight jab, straight bang, and that's all he did. And he burst Deontay's eardrum. He put the weight in, and not only that, but he changed his nutrition as he came in with lean muscle mass. He wasn't fat by any stretch of the means. He put in the work. And Deontay Wilder came in 19 pounds heavier than he did for their first fight. The problem with Deontay Wilder is he's got a very, very frail lower half. And you could see that he didn't put any work into his legs. He came bigger, more bulked up top, and it wasn't going to carry his frame. His legs were not going to carry his frame. I wasn't shocked by it. And we'll see. We'll see if this Anthony Joshua fight works out. But last thought on that is, how funny is it that after Joshua got knocked out and he changed his style because he realized that Andy Ruiz was a bad matchup for him as far as him going in there and trying to fight for the knockout and leave himself open because of the size difference, because of the compact size of Ruiz. He was getting clowned by Wilder. Wilder was saying, you're no real champion. You're a punk. Real champions don't change their style to come back. They don't box all night like that. You're a heavyweight. Wilder better learn how to box because that style he got, it's never going to work against a guy like Tyson Fury.
Agreed.
And I don't just go out on a limb and say it won't work against a boxer puncher like Anthony Joshua either.
Agreed. And that's why I said that you know, he's not a boxer. You summed it up right there, man. Not a boxer. And unless he somehow establishes that into his repertoire, you know, yeah. But with that being said, listeners, that brings us to the point of the show that we all know and love, where we get to hear Mad Mike's rant for the week. And this might be a big rant because we didn't do a show last week, so I'm sure he got a lot on his mind, or he has something that he's peed off about. Mad Mike, what is your rant for the week, brother?
My rant, Lloyd, is simple, and I hate to always, you know, or sometimes it bothers me to do this men versus women stuff, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm tired of this double standard. Really, really tired of this double standard. I don't know if you saw, but remember over the winter, or I'd say around November, remember Terrell Pryor was almost murdered, stabbed in his chest during a dispute with his girlfriend. So apparently the attempted homicide charges against her in the case were dismissed on the strength that her friend was a witness and said that Terrell Pryor was beating her like a man. So basically, she acted in self-defense. She got aggravated assault, and he got simple assault. He lost 3.5 liters of blood and was minutes away from death. These are all in the police report. You tell me, if the shoe was on the other foot and he stabbed her in his chest, in her chest, do you think that the homicide charge would be dropped, or he'd be on you know, he'd be charged with homicide and fighting for his freedom right now?
Man, no, you said that. Man, that's crazy, man.
So you see what I'm saying? So what to me, the justice system here, everybody involved, the reporters, everybody, you need to be a little more consistent. If a football player is going to get stabbed in his chest and is moments away from losing his life, and somehow he's still charged in altercation, and the person that stabbed him in the chest is only getting assault, not even assault with a deadly weapon, just aggravated assault, literally. What does that carry? What's the time? What's the sentence that carries, that charge? Off the strength that a friend said that she was getting beat like a man? A friend? When there are other people that refute that statement? Come on. Oh, my beef is with the justice system. It's gotta be 100% even down the line. Like if that was him, he'd be charged with homicide. With attempted homicide. We know that to be fact. What's going on?
Yeah, that's tough. That's amazing, man. Amazing. But that's the world we live in, unfortunately. And with that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to a close. At least we show me and the man Mike like to thank you for sticking with us. And we want to thank our producer, A.O. Omar Baker, for rocking out with us. For listening, moving forward, we're going to have so much more to talk about. NFL Combine, baseball season is going to be kicking off real soon. So, listen, when is there never not a great time to be a sports fan or a fan of sports? So with that being said, listeners, have a safe and blessed week. And me and the Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So, hey, yo, let's go, baby.
And just like that, much like my cup of coffee, this show is over, finished, finito, done, we're out of here. Thank y'all for listening. If you subscribed, much appreciated. If not, please do so, because brand new episodes drop every single Monday, and I would hate to see you miss something. LloydAThompson.com, part of my fresh.com. Subscribe, follow at Lloyd A. Thompson on Instagram and Twitter. We're out of here. Peace.